Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country. We started out with the Pittsburgh Pirate Podcast earlier this morning. Now we find ourselves in Pearl River, New York. It's Talk Geek with Tyler Brook. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this from Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. Goes by quick. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Tyler, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? Third of all, you're bringing another great guest on your great podcast, my friend.
All these things are true. And before we get any further, I would like to thank Rapid Designs for sponsoring this episode. Once again, that company is Rapid Designs, currently available on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. For those of you that don't know me, you're tuning into the wrong show. But on a serious note, I am Tyler Brook. I am not only the host of this show, but the host of Geek Talk with Tyler. I am currently available on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and if you just want to shoot me an email, go to tylerbrook111@gmail.com. That's tylerbrook111@gmail.com. And if you feel like being a little generous, please do support my Patreon page. I could always use the money. And speaking of my show, I would like to bring in my guest, Justin, who will be a future guest of mine. Justin, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here today.
It's a pleasure to be here. I've always enjoyed talking about nerdy topics.
Terrific, terrific. Now, our episode today is going to be called The Importance of Scores and Soundtrack. For those of you that are unfamiliar, a score is basically the instrumental side of any soundtrack. Like, obviously, one of the more famous soundtracks that I can think of is Guardians of the Galaxy. A lot of the songs there are a 60s, 70s-esque quality, but the music that's also there can be instrumental. Now, Justin, what are some of your favorites?
That's an incredibly long list, but I tried to narrow it down to just a couple. First of all, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, the 2019, not to be mistaken with the 1954, which is also great. And I'm also a big fan of Gone with the Wind 1939 score.
Well, that's a huge transition. You got freaking kaijus to freaking Gone with the Wind.
My stepdad was a film buff, so I've had a lot of exposure over my growing up time. So,
you know what, that's fair. And as long as we're talking about Japanese movies and or inspired movies, I have to say one of my personal favorites is Princess Mononoke. To anybody listening that has HBO Max, I strongly recommend this film. It is really well written and really well done. And it would appear that we're getting our first question. Davis from Warren, Ohio. How about Deadpool? Love that movie. Funny as well. Any thoughts? This show is dope. Keep it going. Well, Davis, these are all excellent notes. Deadpool had an interesting soundtrack, both score and musical. A lot of 90s-esque stuff. But to be fair, Deadpool was created in the 90s, so it makes sense to have a 90s song for a 90s character. What were your thoughts on Deadpool, Justin?
Well, first of all, I have to admit that I'm not actually a big fan of Deadpool, the character, not just the movie, but the soundtrack of that one was indeed perfectly fitting. That 90s feel fit in perfectly with the setting, and that's really what a good score or soundtrack should do, is fit perfect with the film.
Terrific. And as long as we're speaking about the eras of yesteryear, Transformers the movie, another beautiful soundtrack. Not the Michael Bay ones that were not done justice. But I'm talking about the old school one, the 80s one. Back when we had Orson Welles as Unicron, the planet-sized Transformer, and the Star Trek guy, whose name was Leonard Nimoy, as Galvatron, Megatron's upgraded form.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of that soundtrack, Justin?
Well, the soundtrack for that one I felt was just that quintessential 80s animation kind of soundtrack. When I think of iconic ones, that's definitely one of them in terms of animated film. So, I mean, if it's gotten to that level, then it's got to have something to go for it.
It really does. It was definitely – and the funny thing about Hasbro, whenever they make a new movie, it's just a way for them to introduce new toys, I mean characters. And it would appear we're getting our next question. Rick from Mesa, Arizona. The Hulk was my personal favorite. Great podcast you guys have. Well, Rick, first off, thank you. Always appreciate the love and support. The Hulk, I'm assuming you're going with the latest one, the latest Hulk movie that came out. That was an interesting one, very well written. The soundtrack was there. What are your thoughts on Hulk, soundtrack and or character?
Well, the character is incredibly hard to write for, so I really don't envy anybody that task, because they just got to take Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and find a way to make it into an action film. So, you know, I feel kind of rough for anybody writing it. Musically speaking, I thought it was kind of lackluster, just to be honest, and I don't want to make anybody that likes it, you know, by any means, like what you like, but I just thought it was kind of lackluster. Like, I don't remember any key points in it or anything, but that's just me.
Okay, that's understandable, but I think a lot of the times when people focus on soundtracks, they focus on the lyrical songs instead of the background songs. But I think it's important to remember that a background song definitely does set the mood for the characters in question. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes. My friend and I, actually, we were just kind of doing a little bit of background talk about this episode coming up. And he and I were discussing that glorious time in the late 80s and early 90s where every movie had to have a song. Going back to, like, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, you had that classic song. And then you go into, like, say, Armageddon, you had a hit single all written for a movie. And that really did help set an overall tone. So there's a lot to be said for it.
It really does. And it's funny, the variety of instruments that we have that help set the mood. We have violins mm-hmm. that usually do the more sorrowful one. But then we got my personal favorite, the trumpet, as more of an upbeat and livelier one. What instruments would you say you really gravitate towards, too, in terms of scores?
For film scores, I actually think that the unsung hero has got to be the ocean harp, which is one that's not really talked about all that much. It kind of looks like a brass spittoon with, like, these weird spiky things coming off of it. And it can be plucked, hammered, or you can use a rosin violin bow on it. And that's what gets those really screechy, almost crystal-sounding tones in a lot of horror films. And it gets used to great effect in a lot of other suspense-building kind of tones. And I don't think it gets enough credit, and most people don't even know what it is. So that's my personal favorite instrument for film scores.
That is a little setting. That's something so well-used, so proper. Doesn't get the screen time or the fame that it does. But I think that's something a lot of the times that happens more times than not. Something that's new and exciting versus something that's more familiar, which explains why we have all these Batman movies, all these Superman movies, all these movies of characters we already know exist, when we could get characters like freaking Etrick and the Demon or Lobo, or trying to think of another great character that would deserve their own movie. I don't know, maybe like a Black Canary-esque character. Do you agree with that, Justin?
To some extent, but I think the reason why we get so many, say, Batman movies, Batman has its own popularity, but the reason we get so many like that is because we're talking about an American-made mythology here, okay? When we're talking comic characters, it's really its own entity. And I think the reason we see so many of those up in the forefront is because those are the ones we're familiar with. It's just like if you look at the Eddas in the Norse mythology, you get a handful of gods that are talked about all the time, and then there's like this whole chain of lesser knowns that, you know, oh, well, this is a regional god that people pray to and this and that. So, I mean, everybody has their own favorite B-listers. I'm a big Hawkman fan, for example, so I'm really looking forward to Black Adam. But I think that has a lot to do with why we're getting the really popular ones up front, because even in modern-day Iceland, it's not super uncommon to run across somebody that has the name Thor as part of their given name. So, I mean, I think it's just says something about the popularity of certain figures within mythologies, and That's why we're never going to have a shortage of Batman films. That's why we're never going to have a shortage of Superman references.
Well, you're not wrong, but as long as we're diving into that realm, I think TV show scores are absolutely brilliant. Gargoyles, for example, had a phenomenal scoring. Whether it's just the intro itself or even the scene where we see Goliath discover the remains of his fallen clan, that was just beautifully well done. Soundtrack and everything. Even that whole guttural role Keith David provides. Which, what are your thoughts on the new season that's coming out?
We're talking new season of Gargoyles is coming out from, IDW Comics?
I believe so, yeah. I think Disney's going to produce it because they did originally own Gargoyles. But, yes.
I believe that they're having IDW actually do the actual comic work, which I'd rather them outsource on that kind of thing because Gargoyles has a very, how should I word this? It's its own kind of creature in terms of comic book storytelling. I remember the old slave labor graphics released comics, and those were phenomenal, and they maintained that dark tone, and that's what I heard that they're supposed to be doing with these comics is maintaining that original tone, and I'm looking forward to reading those.
Its own creature. Was that a pun?
Always.
Ha, that's brilliant. And it appears we're getting some more messages. Denise from San Francisco says, hi, boys. Hi to you, too, Denise. And Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, apologies if I butchered that. How about the Cartoon Network, Batgirl, Charmed, etc.? That's definitely an interesting thought. DC has as many things as DC does right. There's been many things where DC has done wrong. If you've catched my the DCEU mess episode, music is definitely not one of the things they do wrong. Whether it's the old Tim Burton films or even if it's the goofy Adam West ones, the scoring in that was just phenomenal. What are your thoughts on that, Justin?
Well, if we're talking DCEU, I'm thinking, like you said, the original Batman movie from Tim Burton. That music in particular is another one of my favorites, and it was so popular when Danny Elfman wrote it that it actually ended up getting also used in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves that I mentioned earlier because it's a much longer piece than what was actually incorporated into the Batman film where they just put excerpts from it where needed, and it was just a wonderfully edited together piece in both films that it ended up in. DC has managed to get the music right because, like, say, Wonder Woman had a great score. Even Wonder Woman 84 had a really good soundtrack, despite the fact that the movie itself was kind of, I don't want to be one of those guys, so I'm just going to say it just wasn't great.
Yeah, here's what I'm going to say about Wonder Woman 84. The best thing about Wonder Woman 84 is a Kristen Wiig furry. That's like if Cats was done right. That's what Wonder Woman 84 is.
If I was going to see somebody with wings, I would have much rather seen a Hawk Girl.
Honestly, I would have just gone full lizard origin with that. Barbara Minerva was a genetic engineer. She needed money for her funds, couldn't afford a test subject, tested on herself, robs banks to fund her research. Boom, done. Is it going to win an Oscar? I doubt it. But is it better than what we got? Yes. Yes, it is.
And, well, let's face it, the movie itself wasn't going to win an Oscar anyway, so.
No, but it was definitely one of the more interesting comic book shows, movies. I mean, it's not the worst one I've seen, hashtag Howard the Duck. But, it's definitely up there. But that was a blast from the past. It's like, because you were brought Star Wars by George Lucas, here's a Daffy Donald Duck-esque character that knows quack foo and falls in love with a human female.
Well, Howard the Duck, I don't know why they decided to turn Howard the Duck into the movie that they did because it was very much a departure from the satirical base of the comics from which it hailed, if I'm remembering the order correctly. And honestly, it didn't do the source material justice.
It really didn't. So, and I am now getting a message from Albert Poway, California. Again, I apologize if I butcher that. I heard Ben Affleck next year going to be Batman. Again, any thoughts on that? Well, Albert, well, as many of you know, I'm more into the animated stuff. Kevin Conroy, hands down, is the best Batman of all time. In fact, I actually asked him a question about his interaction with Mark Hamill. You can catch that on my Facebook page. That's Tyler Brooke, if you want to catch that, when I was at Terrificon last Saturday. So, Justin, Ben Affleck, Batman, thumbs up, thumbs down?
I prefer the thumb sideways on him because unless you can get Batman in a solo film, you're not going to know how well the actor's going to do with it. The thing is that's sad about Affleck is that so many people are like, oh, I hate this character, I hate this character, and it's because he's too human. But that's very much the tone of the modern comics with Batman. I have a buddy of mine. He's a huge Batman aficionado, and he is really adamant about that. He talked me into reading some stuff that I normally wouldn't have read. And, like, in the build-up to the famous Batman-Catwoman wedding, there was a bachelor day, if you want to use that expression, where it was Batman, Catwoman, Superman, and Lois Lane, all in their alter egos, of course, spending the day at a carnival and watching Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne basically have a battle of the egos throughout the entirety of the comic. You can't picture too many actors being able to do that and still feel like Batman. And I feel like Affleck could have done that given the opportunity. So him coming back, I don't hate the idea.
Honestly, as far as we're talking about potential Batman, here's what we need. We need Michael Keaton as old Bruce Wayne, you know, just do a Batman Beyond thing where he realizes he's too old to continue the mantle of Batman. And then passes the torch to his son, spoilers for those that haven't seen Justice League or any of the DCAU shows, Terry McGinnis. Now, who should we get as Terry McGinnis? If memory serves, he was half Asian, right?
I believe so. I admit I do have a little bit of a gap in my bat knowledge as it pertains to Terry McGinnis. I know who he is. I remember watching the show back when it was still coming out new. And I've revisited one or two episodes since, but not really a whole lot.
That's fair. And Shaun the Dark, the guy that did was Shang-Chi and Shang-Chi, would he be a good Terry McGinnis?
Actually, I think in order for a Terry McGinnis character to come off right, you're going to have to go younger.
Okay.
And that's because
that's
Terry McGinnis, through his intro, was the rebellious teen. If Batman would have came across him a few years earlier, he probably would have just been a
problem. Do you know how many older guys play teenagers?
Well,
so that's like always been a thing.
Spider-Man for that, but
no, case in point. I was actually thinking Saved by the Bell or That 70s Show. But yeah, that's another phenomenal example right there. Topher Grace, the most mature teenager I can think of.
Yeah, but like I said, if you look at any of the Spider-Man franchises in the live-action films, you have older guys playing younger guys. It's just kind of how it goes. But I don't know that they'd be able to make up him down enough to look like a high school student is what I'm saying here.
No, but back to the scores, as long as it's done right, I think we could have ourselves a decent film. I mean, I don't expect DC to spit out a movie of Phase 1 MCU quality, but they definitely need to step up their game.
They do, but I also think that they need to stop wasting their, wasting their goodwill on the Arrowverse. We need to just cut off all of the Arrowverse stuff and just say, okay, well, this is over. We got to move forward. And I think it's because they're wasting all their goodwill with
that,
and it's just been declining.
But to be fair, Green Arrow is basically a rich man's Hawkeye.
Well, I was going to say that Green Arrow, as represented in the Arrowverse, was just Batman with a bow.
That actually is hilarious. And if you ever see the Injustice movie, I love the scene that they have between Green Arrow and Harley Quinn. He's like, the Arrow Cave is stupid. He's like, what? He's like, well, bats live in caves, so a bat cave makes sense. So why not call your hideout the Quiver? And Green Arrow's like, that actually makes a lot of sense.
And I believe that scene was actually a straight from the comics translation, too, if memory serves. I'm not saying that it does.
I actually can see that being a scene from the comics. Like, another scene I would like to see in theaters is the one between Spider-Man and Sauron. For those of you that don't know, Sauron is a humanoid pterodactyl-looking mutant who wants to turn people into dinosaurs. And Spider-Man goes, wait, you have the power to manipulate DNA? Why not cure cancer? And then Sauron just goes, but I don't want to cure cancer. I want to make dinosaurs. That I would love
to
see
would fit,
in theaters.
I think that would fit very much with what they've done with Spider-Man and a lot of the other Marvel movies to date. So I don't think you'll ever get it, but I think it'd fit.
That's fair, and we are now getting a question from Sal from Germantown, Pennsylvania. Whatever happened to the Green Hornet, Ballspace, and the Mad Hatter? Yeah, those are definitely all interesting characters that definitely got phased out of time, especially Mad Hatter. Like, I think the last time I really saw Mad Hatter was Roddy McDowell's incarnation in the Batman the Animated Series, and then he just got phased out entirely after that. Do you recall ever seeing any of these characters fairly recently?
Can you give me that list again?
Yeah, sure. That was Green Hornet, Ballspace, and the Mad Hatter.
Well, I like you said, I believe they kind of phased Mad Hatter out a little bit, and I'm okay with that, honestly. An interesting character within the Bat universe, yes, but honestly, I just think Alice in Wonderland is a horribly overused property. But as far as, like, the Green Hornet, the problem that we're going to have with the Green Hornet is it's a hard character to use because there's not been a proper balance in how the character is portrayed. We have the horribly racial stereotype version of Green Hornet and Kato from, like, the old serials in the 30s. Might have been the 40s. Don't quote me on that. But anyway, and then we go into the Bruce Lee era where Kato was basically the character of the show. And then we got the absolutely horrid, tropey version in the live-action movie where it was just sad. It was just sad what they did to the character. And really, if we're talking about DC, they've got a lot of major detective-based characters, hence Detective Comics. But so I think it's going to be a hard way to ever find Green Hornet to come back in full swing in any property.
Well, you're not wrong. And it's funny, when I always think of phased out characters, for you anime fans there, you may get this. If not, I apologize in advance. There's a character in the original Dragon Ball series called Launch. She was a huge part of the cast. And then when Dragon Ball Z happened, it's like, wait, we're having a Launch. And it's been confirmed by Akira Toriyama, the manga writer of the series, that he just forgot about her. And I find that hilarious, that somebody that important to a series you just forget about.
Well, in fairness, I'm a fan of The Shadow, so I'm kind of used to characters that were at least one time important to everybody being completely forgotten about by the bulk of people. So,
well, you're not wrong. And it's like you can only milk a character for so long, depending on the character, before they become either tired, overused, or, yeah, let's move on to the next person.org. But as far as score goes, these are some excellent films that had very wonderful scores. Princess Mononoke, Transformers the movie, the latest Godzilla movies, Gone with the Wind, Lion King, definitely. Not only did it have great original songs, but it had phenomenal scores. And we are coming up on the three-minute mark. So, Justin, I would like to thank you for your time being here. Is there anything else you feel like worth mentioning before we wrap this bad boy up?
Nothing that I'd have time to actually explore in depth, so I'm just going to say no, and we'll go from there. Because you and I could talk for a while. We've discovered that over phone calls.
All right, no worries, man. All good. And I apologize. I didn't get the chance for people to say who you are and what you do. Would you like to share that spotlight now?
Sure. I'm Justin Hunt. In addition to a whole bunch of other projects and writing projects that I do, I also have a podcast that's unfortunately on a slight hiatus for the time being, but it's The Kilted Lantern. It's on Anchor and most places, actually, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the greats. And it can be found also through Facebook, through a page, and The Kilted Lantern group where we engage in discussions. And I'm also on Instagram at Kilted Lantern. So, yeah.
Terrific, terrific. Now, should we give our audience an insight of the two-part episode we're going to be doing?
If you'd like to, yeah.
All right, so basically we're going to be talking about how anime has influenced Western works and how Western works have influenced the anime world. Justin, if I researched correctly, I was talking on how anime influences the West, or sorry, how the Western world influences anime, correct?
I do believe so.
Terrific, terrific. And that's going to be available this November, so stay tuned to your podcast streaming services, everybody. Once again, I would like to give a special shout-out to Rapid Designs. They are currently available on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And for those of you that would like to catch up with me, shoot me a text, send me something you believe I think would think funny, or if you just wanted to show some financial support to your friendly neighborhood Tyler Man, I am currently available on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and shoot me an email at tylerbrook111@gmail.com. And no, I don't have TikTok because I'm not 3 years old. So, Justin, once again, thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time out of your otherwise busy schedule to chat with me about Scores, DC, and a plethora of other things.
My pleasure.
And if you would like to be a guest and or bring a topic to my attention, please do not hesitate to reach out to your friendly neighborhood Tyler Man, and he will be open to topics. But I don't get political because I don't want to. Mark, would you like to take the mantle from here?
Yeah, great show as we wind this thing down. And boy, I can't wait to hear next week's show as the guests keep coming in here, well over 300 today. And thanks to Justin coming in as a guest, breaking it all down for the listeners and everything. Just unbelievable. Guys, stay tuned at the top of the hour, live from Fresno, California. Mark Men Madness will be coming in, Mark Heffernan. His guest will be a former Dodger and Mariner, Jack Perconti. So as we wind this thing down, any final thoughts with you guys before we close this great show out, Tyler?
Yes. For those of you that have Spotify, do check out my latest episode. We speak about dragons and how have they've influenced the world of mythology. And for those of you that have followed my show regularly, you'll remember Daniel Amorcino, who has been a phenomenal guest in that episode, as well as the other ones I have coming up and or have already recorded. And if you check my Facebook page, I have a plethora of wonderful episodes for the Geek Talk with Tyler episode phase in Phase 4. As for Talk Geek with Tyler right now, stay tuned next week. We have another wonderful guest and another wonderful topic we will be exploring. What is it? You're just going to have to wait and find out. Until then, stay geeky, everybody.